And he told me that she has a slot right here that she'll pull if you go over time and fall through the stage. So I appreciate the invitation to be here today, and I want to visit with you a little bit about pregnancy diagnosis. And I'm going to talk about really all available pregnancy diagnosis methods. And what I really want to leave you with is that no matter what method you choose to use, just choose one that works well for your operation and fits within your management style. There's a lot of them that work. There's a lot of them that work well. And we can debate which ones are better than the others. But just pick one that works well for you and fit it into your management strategy. So pregnancy diagnosis is not something that's a one-size-fits-all type approach. I'll start right here, and this is some older USDA data. This data has been updated a little bit now, but I think as we've gone through this last day and a half, we've heard about a lot of technology that's really on the shelf and really works well for managing reproduction and estrus synchronization and advancing our herds forward. And as we think about sort of how we're going to make progress, I think some of these numbers in this table are sort of concerning in that as we look at the adoption of technology, it's been rather slow. And so I just highlight pregnancy diagnosis here. If you look at some of the latest USDA data, we're still somewhere in the 20 to 25% range of total pregnancy diagnosis across our beef cow herds. And so hopefully today we're going to visit a little bit about that and how to approach it. So I'll start off, you know, talking about really when are the critical time periods that we need to be assessing pregnancy and when does pregnancy loss occur, when does embryonic mortality occur, when can we get accurate measures on our beef herds. And really this slide really sums up really what my lab is interested in and interested in understanding. So if you take 100 beef cows and we check them and we do estrus detection on them and breed them based on the AMPM rule, and we inseminate them, we go in 7 days later, we slaughter those cows, and we would do a really good job flushing out their reproductive tracts. And we would find that about 90% of the time, fertilization occurs. So the actual semen getting to the egg and fertilization happening is not a big problem in beef cows and dairy. That's a whole other situation. Now, as we go out to about day 28, which is really the first time period that we have effective methods for diagnosing pregnancy, there is about a 25% loss that occurs. And so, you know, you go from day 7 to day 28, and we're looking at a 25% loss that embryos were there and that they're no longer there. And so we characterize this as early embryonic loss. You know, there's some debate as to early and late, and I'm just going to use these terms today for simplicity. But as we move forward from that period and go from about day 28, once we can visually see a heartbeat in an embryo or in a fetus, and move out to about day 42 or day 60, you can classify it either way, there's about another 8% loss on the average in U.S. beef herds that happen. And so we're going to characterize this today as late embryonic loss. This is starting to bleed over into early fetal loss. But again, for simplistic sake, we'll leave it at that. After you get past day 42, 45, day 60, somewhere in there, the amount of loss that occurs really decreases. So in this graph, it's about 2%. A lot of it's going to depend on what the last two people spent a lot of time talking about in disease and reproductive-based problems that are going to manifest themselves into abortions later on in gestation. If you look at the data in understanding pregnancy loss in cattle, we know very little from about day 17 through about day 45 in regards to pregnancy loss, what causes it, what are the factors, how to predict it, that type thing, because we have really poor in vivo detection methods to determine whether we're going to have a successful pregnancy. So we can determine whether the cow is pregnant on any given day starting about day 26 of gestation, but determining whether she's going to have a successful pregnancy is a whole other story, and so we'll visit a little bit about some of that today. So I think the math is pretty easy on why we should pregnancy check. If you just take the average USDA data and you look at average cow costs from breeding to weaning, we're looking at about $600. And then we wean a 450-pound calf off that cow with current market value, you're looking at somewhere between $750 and $800 with about $160, $200 profit. If we don't do pregnancy diagnosis and the cow goes through the entire breeding season and the calving season and she ends up open at the end of the day, it's pretty easy that you're looking at a loss in revenue, right? So the most important thing is detecting our non-pregnant cows. Our pregnant cows aren't exciting. It's about trying to detect those non-pregnant females, those unproductive females, and get them out of the herd. So knowing the pregnancy status of your herd, you know, you can make management decisions in regards to nutrition, which we've heard a lot about as well. Marketing plans, determining how you're going to market those calves, you know, determining whether you're going to have more males or females or whatever that might be. It's also really important that as we look at using these reproductive synchronization programs and increasing the technology in our herds, we need to be evaluating whether it's successful or not. And so one of the easiest ways to evaluate whether our reproductive programs are successful is utilizing some type of pregnancy diagnosis to assess that. So whether we're talking about bull semen quality, whether we're talking about synchronization or resynchronization. I think resynchronization linked with pregnancy diagnosis is a real area that we can capitalize on in beef production in order to advance our herds forward. And also I think it's important to be identifying how much pregnancy loss we're having, so that we know sort of where our herd is sitting, so that we can evaluate when we do have problems. And where are those problems manifesting themselves at, and how can we deal with them? So what is the ideal pregnancy test? So I think about this quite often in regards to what we're looking at for sort of the perfect base pregnancy test that could potentially be on the market. So the key features would be that we want something that's highly sensitive. We want to be able to identify our pregnant animals. We want something that's highly specific. We want to be able to identify those non-pregnant animals. I think one of the really important things that we need to think about is we need tests that are embryonic viability specific. So we need to know more than just on that given day if the cow is going to be pregnant. Can we look at sort of how successful that pregnancy is going to be? What is the potential birth weight of that pregnancy going to be? You know, what are the risks associated with it? Those type of things. Needs to be simple, and probably most important, it needs to be something that is not very expensive. So the evolution of pregnancy detection, one of the oldest and most reliable methods, but least efficient methods, is wait for the cow to calve. If she calves, I guarantee you she was pregnant. Visual manual examination, obviously looking for cows to start to bag up, things like that. Starting about day 35, you know, we can do manual palpation of the uterus, and I'm going to talk about that. Getting into the day 20s, day 30s, we're looking at ultrasound, blood-based pregnancy testing, things along those lines. And then really before day 20, the data is really mixed in regards to what's available. And in the proceedings, I laid out a bunch of different stuff in there. I'm not going to have time to talk about it today. One of the big challenges with any pregnancy diagnosis before about day 20 or before day 24 really is there's a lot of pregnancy loss that occurs really from day 20 to day 30, day 35 of gestation. So as we back up our pregnancy diagnosis, you run the risk of observing a lot more pregnancy loss. So it's maybe not that the test not accurate on that given day, it's just that you're experiencing a lot more pregnancy loss. So methods of pregnancy evaluation, we have rectal palpation, we have ultrasound, have chemical blood-based pregnancy testing. And I think one of the things that we commonly hear is that we're limited by what facilities we have, what facilities that we can utilize. And I think that's really important, and that's why I say that pregnancy diagnosis is not a one-size-fits-all. It's what works well for your specific production system. I have a beef producer in Tennessee that has told me that it's easier for him to take milk samples from his beef cows than blood samples. So he chooses to use the milk pregnancy test. I don't necessarily agree with that, but he claims that that's the way. So again, it's not a one-size-fits-all. So rectal palpation, when we go in and start to rectally palpate the cow and start to feel on the uterus, we're looking for things such as fluid. We want to see or feel if the amnion, fetus, placentomes, membrane slip, those type of things are there. Here's a nice day, about 120 fetus. You can see the placentomes. You can see all the sort of fluid built up around here. You can see the fetus. So we're actually manually going in and feeling for those things to determine whether that's there. And again, you can do this starting about day 35, day 40 of gestation. Ultrasound and pregnancy diagnosis, we can do this a little bit earlier. It's really effective at, again, being able to identify those non-pregnant cows. That's kind of always the question when you're, you know, rectally palpating. Most studies show almost 100% accuracy in regards to day 28, day 30 pregnancy diagnosis with ultrasound. And it really provides a witness that the embryo or the fetus is actually there on that given day. And so for all the stuff that I'm going to talk about, you know, when we go in and we scan, we're actually identifying a embryonic or fetal heartbeat on these animals. So it's not that we're just going in and scanning for fluid. We're actually observing something similar to what you would see here in this cross-section of a 2D ultrasound. So here's just an example of, you know, manual palpation and sort of what we're looking for, what we're feeling, you know, looking for the fetus, cotyledons, placentomes, membrane slip, again, looking for or feeling for fluid. When we go in with an ultrasound, so we add the ultrasound probe into there, you can see the example here, and we're gonna do some of this in the lab today, and I'm going to show some pictures that we're going to try to hopefully replicate out at lab so people will have some chances to look at some of this. The ultrasound probe, again, you're actually providing a witness. You're viewing on a screen, you know, what we were feeling with rectal palpation. Other advantages of ultrasound: better diagnosis of twins, more accurate gestational aging. That's one of the big things that we can get a good feel for, you know, early in gestation on sort of how far along is the cow pregnant, when's the predicted calving date, those type of things. We can diagnose fetal sex. We can look at fetal death if there's a embryo or fetus that's there, looks totally normal, but there's no heartbeat. That's a good case that fetus has undergone embryonic mortality or pregnancy loss. Some of the new technology in regards to ultrasound, I'm going to talk about two of them. I'm going to talk about Doppler technology and 3D, 4D ultrasounds. So Doppler technology has been out for a long time, and the good news is that Dr. Kim Vanami knows a lot more about this than me, and she talks next. So I'll let her answer any difficult questions about Doppler technology. But for these specific examples, we're going in, we're looking at the corpus luteum, visualizing the corpus luteum on the ultrasound, and looking at the amount of blood flow that is flowing through that corpus luteum. And we're going to do this afternoon in lab. And so here's an example of a day 18, day 20, same cow, and this individual is not pregnant. Basically, as you look from day 18 to day 20, you see there's very little change in the amount of blood flow, illustrated here by sort of this red infrared looking color in regards to blood flow through that CL. On the opposite side of that, as we look at a pregnant animal, you can see from day 18 to day 20, we have an increase in blood flow through that CL. And so if you look at the data that's out there, a lot of this is coming out of South America. Day 20, day 21, day 22, Doppler technology for diagnosing beef cows in pregnancy status has been pretty accurate. The dairy data it looks like it's a little bit all over the place, but it looks like this is working pretty well for resynchronization purposes. The problem with it is the technology is still moving along. We're learning how to use it, the amount of time spent behind the cow trying to use it, those type of things. So there's some limitations to that. 3D, 4D ultrasound has been around, and I'm sure everyone has seen some of the human pictures of a developing fetus with a 3D, 4D ultrasound. This is really cool technology, I think, from a research point of view. Practicality-wise, we're probably a long way from where it's going to take to make it inexpensive and on-farm use. And basically, this is showing the exact same thing that I showed in the slide before, but we're looking at it in a 3D, 4D view. And so you can see here, you have a lot of blood flow coming through that individual CL there. And sorry, these are kind of small, and again, over here. One of the things that I'm really excited about, and these are some shots that Carlos Pinto and I have taken. Looks like the screen is froze here. There we go. Okay. So these are some 3D, 4D images that Carlos Pinto from LSU and myself have shot. This is about a day 60 female bovine fetus. And you can see here on the one side we have the developing fetus, and you can see the placentome budding in there. Really cool shot. And then on the other side here is a shot of the head. Again, practicality-wise, a long way from where it's going to be that these are inexpensive enough to use them on farm, but I think we're going to be able to learn a lot about sort of pregnancy loss because of the visualization that comes along with it. It's sort of a mixed bag, and it's more of a, I would say, a research focus at this point. A lot of blood-based, chemical-based pregnancy testing platforms have been on the market at any given time. I'm only going to spend time talking about really one of those today, and that is PAG-based testing, pregnancy-associated glycoproteins. And the reason I'm going to focus on that today is that's really the only viable commercial option right now that exists. And it's also the only pregnancy-specific test that is on the market. So what I mean by pregnancy-specific, these proteins, PAGs, are produced by the developing placenta and the developing conceptus. So if you do not have a pregnancy, you will not have these proteins produced. All other blood-based markers that are currently on the market or have been on the market are indirect measures and not pregnancy-specific. Okay, so PAGs are the only pregnancy-specific ones. So what are PAGs? So in order to have PAGs, you have to have a ruminant. In this case, I'm going to use the example of a beef cow. We have to have a developing conceptus, specifically the placenta is where these proteins are produced. Here's a cartoon. This is the fetal side of the developing conceptus. Here's the maternal side. This is, would be the uterus. And we have these green cells here that produce PAG. And what these cells do is they migrate down and will actually contact the uterus in the developing pregnancy and empty their contents into the maternal circulation. And so that's what allows us to be able to take a, for example, a blood sample or a milk sample or whatever it might be to quantify the amount of these proteins that are in circulation. So how does PAG testing work? It's basically an ELISA. Just have this cartoon here. Basically, you go through a series of washes and additions until you get to a development stage where you either get a color change, which in this case we have a dark blue, which represents a positive or pregnant animal, or no color change, where it would be clear or light blue, where basically the animal is negative and not pregnant. Okay. There's three commercial companies that offer PAG-based testing. Bioprint Biotracking has been around the longest since the late 80s. CRI markets DG29, and then IDEX markets a milk-based and a blood-based pregnancy test. All these tests are accurate. If you look at the accuracies that have been summarized across them, they're all really similar to each other. There's very small differences between the tests that sort of myself and academics and research, we worry about. But from a point of view of what's accurate and what's not, they all work. We always get the question, how close are we to a shoot side test? About a year and a half ago, IDEX released the rapid visual pregnancy test, which is a 21-minute test. It can be done on-farm. Everything comes in the kit. And one of the things that really affect the accuracy of PAG testing is the labeling of the tubes, the labeling of the test. And so it's really important that if you're using these to really pay a lot of attention to how you're labeling your tubes. I saw an example not too long ago in our PAG testing clinic at UTCVM. We had 25 samples that came in with the exact same number on them. So when we turn those results back, you get 25 results for cow number 6. And if you can determine what's different between those, then that's pretty good. But we couldn't. And they were all different. Some were pregnant, some were non-pregnant. So it's really important to keep that in mind. Accuracy of the test, here's a study that we did looking at 720 beef cows with a 54% pregnancy rate, 386 pregnancies with a detectable, viable embryonic heartbeat. When you compare that to the blood test, we had a 52% pregnancy rate, 375 pregnancies. When you look at the specificities and sensitivities, it calculates out to a 97% average. If you look at the accuracies of a number of studies, I've just pulled a couple here, you can see that the accuracies range from about 95 in this case down to this study from 94 to 98%. And that's really what we see over and over again. So the test isn't perfect. We know that, and I'm going to show you why, one of the reasons that we know the test isn't perfect here in just a second, but it works, and it's an alternative method. If you're in an area that you have hard access to a veterinarian, for example, or you just have a few cows, you need a pregnancy diagnosis or whatever it might be. So what do PAG profiles look like during pregnancy? It doesn't matter what type of cow it is, where it is in the world, or if it's a water buffalo. They always look just like this. About day 24 of gestation, we see the first significant increase in PAG production that we can detect in circulation. PAGs will increase from about day 24 to 34 to 35, and then they start to decrease for about 1 to 2 months, and we'll actually get rather low and That has affected some of the accuracies of some of the tests, and those have been addressed, and changes have been made to account for that. And then as we go through the 9 months of gestation, you can see that PAGs really start to increase as the conceptus and as the placenta and as that fetus starts to grow and gets rather large. And so that's why all PAG tests have some type of set mark for days postpartum or post-calving to test your animals, because PAG has a half-life and will hang around. So most of those tests are 60 days postpartum, 60 days after calving, before you can test that animal again. And so this is an example. This would be an example with a test that has a 90-day postpartum withdrawal for testing. So we have an animal that calves. You can see PAG starts to decrease. 65 days after calving, we'll AI that cow through some synchronization protocol. We have pregnant and open based on a test that we've done right there at 95 days, in this case, post-calving. And then we have this situation where what happens with cows that experience embryonic mortality. And so that's what I want to spend a little bit of the last 5 minutes here I have or so talking about. And I want to approach it from sort of the future of pregnancy diagnosis. I work with a pretty diverse group at Tennessee, and one of our folks does a lot with drones and monitoring precision ag from drones. And so I always joke that we're going to start pregnancy diagnosis by drones here pretty soon in cattle. But if you think about pregnancy diagnosis and what the future holds, again, it goes back to that embryonic viability thing. So we want to develop methods that don't just tell us about how successful or what that pregnancy is on that given day, but how successful that pregnancy can be. Is it going to be a viable pregnancy? Is it going to go forward to produce a calf, etc.? So when you start looking at pregnancy loss and PAG profiles, one of the things that we always see, so this is two individual cows here. The arrow represents the last time that we visualize an embryonic heartbeat or a fetal heartbeat in these animals. What we always see is in animals that experience pregnancy loss after day 28 of gestation, they always have a decrease in PAG in circulation prior to the loss of heartbeat. And so that gave us the idea, well, maybe we could develop tests that are specific to determining embryonic viability by looking at PAG levels and looking at different sort of detection methods for PAGs. So this specific graph here represents 5,000 pregnancies, both Bos indicus and Bos taurus cows, where we bred animals. We did pregnancy diagnosis at day 28 of gestation. Day 28 to day 30, day 31, it didn't really matter. We considered them to be pregnant if they had a viable embryonic heartbeat. We also took a blood sample for PAG to quantify PAG on that given day. We then came back somewhere between 60 and 100 days of gestation to determine whether that cow was still pregnant to that original pregnancy. And if she was, she went into the embryonic survival group, and you can see that those animals have higher circulating PAG compared to the animals that are going to experience embryonic mortality, even though on that given day they both had embryos that looked and felt normal based on ultrasound, and they both had heartbeats. So there was already a difference in PAG production by those pregnancies. If you look at pregnancy success in PAGs in the same exact model, what you'll see is as day 28 PAG increases in circulation, we get an increase in the probability of that cow actually going to term to have a calf, right? Not a live calf, just having a calf. And you can see that that ranges from about 30 to 100%. So a 70% difference just based on PAG levels alone. If we look at on the flip side of things and we ask the question, well, what is the probability or what is the chance that that cow is going to experience pregnancy loss after I have visualized a viable heartbeat looking at PAG? And what you'll see is that below about 1.4, 1.5 nanograms per mil of PAG at day 31 in this case, didn't matter if it was 28, 29, 30, 31, there's a 100% chance that that animal is not going to go on to have a successful pregnancy. Once we get past that, you can see there's about 100% chance in this specific model that she is going to go on to have a successful pregnancy. And so for us, we're using this specific approach to try to understand why this pregnancy loss is occurring and what are the mechanisms behind it. Because we can predict these animals that are going to have a successful or non-successful pregnancy at day 28 of gestation. So for us, it's a really good tool, and we hope to be able to understand some of that loss. So how early can you detect PAG? Again, I already said about day 24 is the earliest, so we've done a lot of studies looking at day 24 pregnancy diagnosis in heifers following embryo transfer. And this is a specific example of that. We did pregnancy confirmation via ultrasound on day 31 and day 60, but we are trying to use day 24 PAG testing as a marker of pregnancy diagnosis in this specific study. So what we see, and we've seen this over and over again now, animals that are going to end up non-pregnant on day 31 of gestation following embryo transfer have significantly lower PAG compared to animals that are going to end up pregnant on day 31 of gestation. And this is highly repeatable. The issue is this 11% of animals right here that I have classified as likely embryonic mortality. So we have animals, heifers specifically, so they've never had a pregnancy before, so it's not residual PAG from a previous pregnancy, that at day 24, they will have PAG in circulation. But 11% of these animals out of 400 at day 31 were not pregnant. And so that's why I say developing pregnancy tests earlier is always going to be an issue because of the pregnancy loss situations. Now, one of the really nice things is, though, as we look at pregnancy success, so thinking back a few slides as I was talking about pregnancy success from day 31 forward, we've looked at this exact same approach using day 24 PAG testing. And what we see is that if you look at day 24 PAGs, the animals that have high day 24 PAGs also have successful pregnancies moving forward. So those cows that have low day 24 PAGs that end up pregnant, they also have an issue with pregnancy loss. So this seems to be manifesting itself earlier, and I think there's going to be something to being able to back up PAG testing, but it's going to take a lot of work because of this specific situation right here. So I have a graph representing some dairy heifers on the top, and below I have the Angus cow data summarized from Tennessee. If we look at pregnancy loss from day 24 to 31 alone, so we characterize this based on Doppler, based on progesterone, based on PAGs. In those dairy heifers, we have 20% loss from day 24 to 31 after they're undergoing embryo transfer. And our Angus cows in Tennessee undergoing fixed-time AI, we have about 7 to 12% loss depending on the herd from 24 to 31. So I think this is concerning, but also points to the idea that there's a lot of pregnancy loss occurring right as we're leading up to that first pregnancy diagnosis, and so it's really something to think about. So I'll summarize with rectal palpation, ultrasound, PAG testing are all effective methods. And, you know, one of the things that I really want to leave you with is that no matter what, use a proven method and apply it to sort of your management style, okay? So, again, not one size fits all. We just want to figure out a way to do pregnancy diagnosis, detect those non-pregnant cows sooner, and get them out of the cow herd. So with that, I appreciate your attention, and I'll be around. And again, I'll be at the lab today. We'll be doing a lot of this ultrasound-based stuff that I talked about, so hopefully you'll be able to get some hands-on experience there. So I appreciate it. Thank you.